This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Now, we have the great Billy Crystal. We're always happy when we can speak with him. And today is the 20th anniversary of the release of 61, which is, you know, one of the best sports movies you'll ever see. And we thank Billy for coming on the show. Billy, Michael, Don, and Peter, how you doing today?
I'm good. Michael, I'm sorry I'm a little late. You gave me the wrong number.
Did I really?
Oh, jeez. Yeah,
you were one digit off, but I
know what? I have
it.
Fat fingers. I'm sorry. I apologize.
I understand. You've been on grass for the last 4 weeks or whatever. How many
well, it's
games
legal now, right? It's legal.
No, I didn't mean that grass. Yeah.
Does it seem like 20 years? Because to me, it doesn't seem like 20 years.
No, it doesn't. And this is a crazy year for film anniversaries for me. Tonight is the 20th. And then June 7th is the 30th anniversary of City Slickers.
And then
in the fall is the 20th anniversary of Monsters, Inc. So it's like one of those years where you say, boy, I should have an artificial hip by now, shouldn't I?
This movie, right, and all the other great stuff you've done, I would say, and you correct me if I'm wrong, this had to be a passion project because I know how you feel about the subjects in here. Was this something that you just loved doing?
Oh, I did. I mean, right from the beginning when I first got involved, you know, I was 13 that summer, and I remembered it like, you know, I was like Rain Man, you know, of stats and players and faces and games and plays. And when Ross Greenberg called me, who was the head of HBO Sports, and said, we've got this script called The M&M Boys. Would you take a look at it? I think you should be involved in it. And I read it and I said, you know, I have all of these amazing stories that Mickey ended up telling me because, unbelievably, we became very good friends. And I was able to meet with a young writer, Hank Steinberg, and I kept putting in stuff that Mickey had said. And I was Mantle. You know, I could imitate him in the room and you know, get the sound that we needed and make it real. And then Ross and I made a trip to Detroit. Tiger Stadium was abandoned. And because, you know, if you say you're going to do this, where do you find Yankee Stadium? Mm-hmm. So Tiger Stadium was like perfect for us, and we were walking around on a freezing cold day right before Thanksgiving, and you've been there 1,000 times, those huge Michigan clouds sitting on top of the ballpark, and light was coming through the porticos, and it was hitting a field right, and Mantle played there, and Maris played there, Ty Cobb started there, Ruth Garrig, and I said, I'm going to direct a movie. It was so much a part of me, and I think I'm not in the movie, but there's more of me in this movie than there is in movies that I've starred in.
Wow.
And as you said, you were a fan and you had the memory. But when you're going through the continuity of the film, did your memory betray you at all? Because that happens to me. Like, I'm so sold on what happened, then I go back and go, wow, I misremembered that. Did going through the continuity, did you find your memory challenged at all?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's little things, and there are some, you know, the baseball film nerds who like to pick things apart or find something, and you go, oh, you know, Bob Serve wasn't with the Yankees when the season started. He came, and you know, a couple of weeks later. So, but I love the guy who played him, so we put him there, and it wasn't until, you know, after the film came out that you start getting these, you know, the guys who look for something wrong, who don't enjoy the whole. So, but pretty much. Pretty much it happened, and there were many times during moments that I would my eyes would glisten again. And we threw this practice. Reggie Smith was our technical advisor, and because he, you know, he's a great switch hitter, and he played against Roger and Mickey when he was with the Red Sox. And we had shot the non-baseball stuff first in L.A. So we get to Tiger Stadium, and it's with this amazing set designer. It was the 1961 Yankee Stadium that all of us loved. I mean, the monuments are there, the low wall in right field, the 296, the 457, the 461, the whole deal. And the Yankees come out. I wanted to throw a practice the day before shooting started. And there they are in their uniforms, and it's the vintage uniforms. which were this sort of off-white, like almost a buttery color. They weren't the white, crisp white that they are now. And there's the numbers. There's our guys. There's 16. There's 32. There's 8. There's 7. There's 9. There's 14. There's 10. There's 1. And it's that lineup. And they're out there on the field practicing, and I just lost it in the best way. And that was an amazing day when Yogi Berra came to visit us. We invited him to come as a surprise, and Merlin Mantle and David and Danny came also as a surprise to our 61 Yankees. And it was a pretty amazing time.
Was there anything, Billy, that made it challenging because of how fond you were of Mickey? I mean, doing a story, a truthful story about someone, everyone has flaws, of course. Is it complicated at all when you're so personally fond of the person?
I was, just on a personal level, I was conflicted, but if I didn't show Mickey a little drunk a couple of times or with a woman, another woman, I wouldn't have done him right, and I think he probably would have been angry that it wasn't. You know, you have to show them warts and all, and we had to do that. And you know, it ended up being, I think, a really fine script with a great performance by Tom Jane as Mickey, and of course Barry Pepper as Roger. Everybody was just tremendous. But I don't think it would have been right if I didn't do that. You know, I would have gotten booed. But people called you to get and tell the truth.
I would also think that one of the toughest jobs for any movie maker is to do something about people that lived. It's not fiction, and the family is watching it, and you're telling the story. So did you get any feedback from the Mantles and the Marises about how their husband or their father was portrayed?
Yeah, well, this was awesome, Mike. Russ Greenberg took the film down to Gainesville to play for the Maris family. The Mantle family, the boys were on board. They'd come to some of the shooting and so on, and they had approved the script and so on. And the Marises were a little reluctant at first because, you know, he had such an edgy relationship with New York, apropos of what you're talking about with Lindor. But that was over seasons. You know, not 18 games. Mm-hmm. And so we screened the movie down there. I'm in L.A., and Ross calls me, and I was really nervous because it was Pat Maris, who was a wonderful person, Roger's widow, the family, and Roger's mother was there. So I'm at home waiting, and Ross calls me. He says, somebody wants to talk to you. And first it was Pat Maris, and she was very teary and lovely on the phone and loved the movie. And then she said, somebody else wants to talk to you. And Roger's mother gets on the phone. And she says, you did it right. That's my boy.
Wow.
And that was one of the greatest reviews that movie ever got.
Billy, the end, including Maguire's run, had to be done. It just had to be. And it was great and it was quaint. But what happened with Mark after, how does that make the ending feel to you or to the audience?
Well, you know, in this culture, it would be easy to say, you know, well, let's cancel Mark Maguire, but it was of the time, and I couldn't go back and rewrite history. It wouldn't be right. But it doesn't. When I watch it, and I see him tear up, and say, you know, I'm damn proud of it, and this is Roger's bat because they had the Maris bat there after that game. You know, it makes you feel terrible in a way, but it's truthful for the movie. So that, you know, I thought about it. Should I go and recut it? I said, no, this is what it was then. Let the audience do what they want with it.
Now, when it premiered, you had a screening at the White House. What was that like, Billy?
I'm laughing because it was so weird. President Bush, who I hated his politics, but he was a great guy. And, you know, he knew Mantle well. They belonged to the same country club and played golf together and so on and so forth. And he was, you know, he was with the Rangers for a while. So we screened the movie, and I'm sitting next to him, and the boots are up on a hassock in front of us with a GWB engraved on them, and I'm going, this is an away game for me. And the first four or five minutes, there's three very rough jokes that Mantle tells reporters and other people, and it's rough. And you know, there's women, and Pat Maris was there, and my wife is there, and other dignitaries, female dignitaries are there. And I whisper to him, there's only a few more of these. And he goes, bring them on. So, but then later in the movie, we're in Detroit. It's an away game for the Yankees. And Roger hits a home run. I think it's number 53. And we have him off Frank Larry, who was the Yankee killer. So it's a nice thing, and the president leans over and goes, no, that's wrong. It's wrong. It wasn't him. It was Hank Aguirre. Aguirre threw that pitch. And unbelievably, I said to him, you're absolutely right.
Wow.
Because here's what happened. The young guy who was scheduled to be Hank Aguirre did not show up, and I had to use the kid who played Frank Larry to throw because that was the only other kid who looked like a pitcher. And so he got it. Can you imagine?
That's crazy.
He knows that it's Hank Aguirre, but the weapons of mass destruction he didn't see. this is what I don't get. Amazing.
Billy, have you in the years since 61, have you thought about any other baseball stories that have tempted you to maybe put on the director hat again and tell another one?
Yeah, the Kurt Flood story. Would have been really interesting story to tell, and would have been I think a great relationship piece and something that was really interesting about, especially in current times, about contracts that say they own you for life and bringing on free agency. I think that would have been a really interesting story to jump into.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
In 86, when the New York football Giants were making the run to the Super Bowl, you and Rob Reiner did a spot on Inside the NFL talking about growing up Giant fans. How special is the football team to you?
Oh, tremendously. Tremendously. I was talking about this, a friend of mine who I grew up with who now lives overseas, and we were talking about those great Giant teams that used to play in Yankee Stadium. And where, you know, the chant of defense came, you know, from those teams. And I can still recite the front line, the Robustelli, Cat Cabbage, Moduleski, that, you know, that group. And the Holland Safari, Sam Huff, and, you know, Erich Barnes, Dick Pessin, and Jimmy Patton. I can go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. So, and we loved those teams. And I still root for them. Through thick and thin, I've been to games where they're terrible. I wouldn't boo. I say this is boy. When I was watching, I felt like, well, I'm going into a divorce arbitration hearing.
It gets close, Billy. It gets close.
I understand, but that's the passion of New York. That's what it is. I mean, Michael, remember when Tino came?
Yes,
in 96?
We talked about that.
Oh, they killed him.
Did you? And he's replacing someone who's as loved as Mantle in some ways by that generation.
They killed Didi too when he started.
Yeah, yep. And they killed him. So Tino ends up 25 homers, 117 RBIs, and he plays 155 games and has 174 hits. And then they loved him. And, yep. You know, arguably at old-timers games, he gets as big a hand as almost anybody. They loved the guy.
Billy, can you tell us, you made another great sports movie, or you starred in one, Forget Paris.
Thanks.
Any great memories of some of the NBA cameos that you had? You had a lot of them, including Kareem, Charles Barkley. Any cool moments from those NBA cameos?
Yeah, they were all great. Barkley was great because it opens the movie and he has to argue with me because as the ref, Mickey Gordon, I make a call without looking at a monitor, without going to New Jersey or wherever they go to do the replays that take 4 minutes. And I make the call, and he screams at me. And it was, you know, he said, what can I say? I said, Charles, just yell at me whatever you want, whatever you would say to anybody, any referee, pick one. And so he just let me have it. And he was great, and he didn't want to leave. He just saying, did I get it right? Did I get it right? I said, you were great. He says, good. Where's craft service? Where's the craft service table?
Now,
and they were all good. Everybody was so much fun. And Kareem, who I've known since high school, we met our senior year in high school through mutual friends. We've known each other a long time.
Wow.
To get him to me to throw him out in his farewell game, and for him to argue with me the way he did, and we had Isaiah and Lambeer. That was a joy to make. That was so much fun.
Now the 20th anniversary. It's on HBO tonight, right, Bill?
9 o'clock. Nine o'clock. Just when we debuted. You know, we debuted at the time. We were the highest rated movie made for HBO at the time. So, and I was really grateful to them that they wanted to recognize this anniversary, and they're going to run it again October 1st, which is the 60th anniversary of the 61st home run.
Wow.
Now,
isn't that something?
It's amazing. The time goes too fast, way too fast. But
it's too fast because when Maris broke the record, that was only 34 years after Ruth had set the record, and now this is 60 years later. And I still feel 13 when I look at that footage.
It's amazing. Now, I have never, ever, when you hosted the Oscars, ever walked away from the TV set. Ever. I was riveted. What were you going to do next? I worked out after an hour of the Oscars. I know you're not going to rip people in the business, but were you as bored as I was?
No pressure.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about booing just came to mind.
Maybe you can do it in Penn Station next year.
I can't really, you know, what I will say is I think that was forgotten for me is that this is a television show. It's not a film.
Right.
And it's an entertainment. And that I felt, you know, was lacking for me, was where's the entertainment for films that people didn't really see a lot or at all? I miss seeing clips. I miss somebody, you know, hosting it or some presence tying it all together for us. That's what I missed.
You know what I used to hate when I all award shows, the music playing people off? Boy, do I miss it.
Yeah.
Because those speeches went on forever.
Yeah, but there were yes, and there were some beautiful moments in those speeches. If you could, you know, if you had the patience to listen through them, then some lovely things were said.
Right.
You know.
Well,
you know,
I got to tell you, Billy. I just my girlfriend and I just revisited City Slickers and City Slickers 2, and I'm 41, she's 31. It was a big movie in both of our childhoods, which we didn't realize till we turned it on. Two things. One, you talked about feeling 13 still. For me, to see that in City Slickers 1, you're waking up on your 39th birthday, and I'm now 41 and saw the movie when I was 11, it was just mind-blowing. And number two, I still remember as a kid the Jack Palance moment from the Oscars. Were you surprised that in a movie which has a ton of heart and is a great movie, but you wouldn't necessarily think we're going to get an Oscar out of this movie? Were you surprised by that? And did you have conversations with him? He must have been so grateful that after that epic career, he ends up getting an Oscar for City Slickers.
First of all, I wasn't surprised. I was thrilled, and we both were nominated for Golden Globes. and he won a Golden Globe. This is before there was SAG Awards, so it was the Golden Globes and then the Oscars were the two big events. So we're sitting together at the table at the Golden Globes, and he wins. And he makes a lovely speech, and he comes back and he sits down next to me. And I said, Jack, you're supposed to go to the press room. And he goes, no, no, I want to be here when you win.
Wow.
Right? So
wow.
Very sweet. Yes, but then 5 minutes later, Morgan Freeman wins, and I don't win. And he gets up and he goes. I said, Jack, where are you going? He said, you lost. I'm going to the press room. So then comes Oscar night, and it was just his time. And you know the amazing thing, guys? He's in the movie, I think, 14 minutes.
Mm. Wow.
You know, of screen time. That's about it. But his scenes were so wonderful, and it was such an honor to work with him. Because the first movie I ever saw in my life was Shane. And he's the bad guy in Shane. He plays Wilson, the bad guy. Now I'm acting with him and having it was like going to an acting museum every day with him to watch him work and to work together and how hard he rehearsed to remember his lines. And he hated being on the horse because it made his back sore, and he was really laboring. And he's so good in the movie. And then he wins. I wasn't surprised at that. What I was surprised at was he hits the ground and he does
the push-ups.
Now, here's the perfect thing. If there's no host, what happens to that moment? You know, so we ran with that the rest of the night. It gave me big jokes throughout the rest of the night and tied the whole night together. And that's why when I understand the no host thing, the show is shorter, yes, but it doesn't have a spine. It doesn't have, right. It doesn't have danger. It doesn't have any chances to it, you know. And the thing with that is you want something unpredictable to happen. And when he did that, which was unpredictable, we just ran with it. I mean, I remember the lines. I every time I'd come to the podium, every few minutes, Jack Palance just bungee jumped off the Hollywood sign. Then 5 minutes later, Jack Palance just won the New York State primary. Then later, there was a song from Hook, and there were 40 kids on stage singing the song from Hook. And when it ended, I walked out and said, Jack Palance is the father of all of these kids. And so that was one of my favorite nights ever as a comedian. And I think that's what you need in these shows, especially in these times. Listen, the Emmys was a very good show.
Yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel did a wonderful job in an empty Staples Arena. And you know, nobody watched. It's just it's a shame.
Don, I know you had one for Billy before we let him go.
Yeah, right in the middle of the whole cop buddy type movies in 86, you come out with Running Scared, and so many times I've stayed up late, it's in the middle of the movie, I just watch it. I love and can't get enough of that movie. Was there any thought of having a sequel to that?
There was. I loved Gregory Hines, and I miss him to this day. He was so great a friend and so wonderful to work with. And yeah, we really wanted to do another one, and then a script came in, and it was not good, and then the studio didn't want to pursue it for whatever reasons, and then I was just funny. The other about a month ago, I was watching Shaq and Charles and Kenny and Ernie, and I'm thinking, me and Shaq, running Scared too.
Why not?
It'd be hard to hold it. Be hard to hold a two shot, but you know.
Do you have another movie coming out soon?
I do, May 7th, next weekend, guys. Next Mother's Day weekend, Friday. Tiffany Haddish and I, in a movie that I co-wrote with my dear friend Alan Zweibel, and I directed it as well, and I'm in it opposite her. It's called Here Today. I couldn't be more excited about it. It's a really funny movie and a charming movie, and it's got a great deal of heart to it, a really beautiful story, and it's next Friday. So I'm in theaters only. So hopefully people will feel safe enough to go to a theater and see it.
You know, before I let you go, and I don't want to be somber, but do you ever sit back and go, God, what a great career I've had. I mean, do you appreciate the brilliant things that you've done? And how you've entertained people? Do you ever allow yourself to just reflect?
I do. I do. I mean, this has been a year of living dangerously,
yeah.
You know, and I had dinner with Bob Costas two nights ago, and we were talking, and he went off what you're doing, and he started going through stuff. And, you know, Janice and I, you know, we've been married 51 years in June, and we lived all of this together, and he went through all of these things that, you know, when we drove home, I went, yeah, it's been really something. I'm looking forward to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And getting a chance to do it, and like with here today, it, you know, I'm 73, and I'm here. I'm writing, acting, directing, and I have ideas for other things to do, and I look back on all of it and think, man, what a ride, and then more to go.
That's just outstanding, and I profusely apologize. I just reread the email. I was off by one number. I'm such a moron. I'm sorry, Billy.
Okay, don't worry about it. I'm here. I'm sweating. Going, it's the wrong number. Then I sent you a text.
Right.
I sent you one of those, and then here we are. But we made it. So
what?
I really enjoyed it, and I loved. I really did. I loved the Lindor bloodbath.
Good.
Thank you.
I did. No, but you guys are what New York's about. You're passionate. And you have different points of view. And the same way someone's booing him at Shea, the guy behind him is going, shut up. That's what you two guys were today.
Last little thing. When people catch you on the street, what's the thing they mention most? Like, what do you hear every day when you go out?
It's a combination of things. Well, because it depends on how old they are. So Peter, sometimes it's have fun storming the castle.
Right.
You know, from Princess Bride. And a lot of big, there's Mike Wazowski. I got a lot of Monsters, Inc. stuff from that generation. And the ones that are really kind of cool will come up and whisper to me. They'll go, mime is money from Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I can't believe.
That's extra cool to me.
And we're going to have to do another interview. Although I heard that you might be coming on my morning show, actually, on Hot 97 with Tiffany. And when I get you there, I have to ask you about Andre the Giant from Princess Bride. Can't believe we didn't do that.
Okay, great. Another great, perfect little cameo. 3 days. Nobody saw my real face. I was under that makeup for 3 days and got a chance to be with him for like a week or so. And he was that was a great, gentle giant.
And one thing I do want to tell you, I have a book on the best interviews from Center Stage coming out in June, and you're at the front of the book.
Oh, that's so great. How many two-timers have you had?
You, Regis, Bob Costas, and I believe that's it.
That's pretty good.
230 great. Shows.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
I look forward to becoming a three-timer.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you, Billy. And
thank you, man.
Tonight.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
You got it. That's a great Billy Crystal. Obviously, we're way behind. Andrew's screaming at me. So we'll give you this day in history when we come back. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. It's Kay, LeGreco, Rosenberg, Billy Crystal, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.